For our first speaker, we have that stalwart revolutionary leader of the New African People's Organization, Chokwe Lumumba.
On behalf of the children, the men, and the women of the New African People's Organization, and on behalf of many of our political prisoners and prisoners of war who can't be here to share this opportunity with you, I want to bring you warm and revolutionary greetings. To all my brothers and sisters who may be Muslims in the house, I say assalamu alaikum. To those who may have accepted Kiswahili as a pan-African political tongue, I say jambo, barigani. And of course, to those who still use the traditional New African street rap, I just say, hey, right? And for all of you brothers and sisters, I greet you in this battle cry of the New African Liberation Movement, free the land.
Free the land.
Free the land.
Free the land.
Free the land. Free the land. I want to salute quickly. We've got to be quickly because they haven't given us much time. Brother Bill Sales and Abdullah Kalima, and those who have worked with them for pulling this conference together, this timely conference, and providing an opportunity for various forces to come together and to contribute to analysis and revolutionary theory on the work of our electrifying revolutionary New African nationalist political prophet, Malcolm X. This process, of course, is no mere trip down memory lane. It's not just a scant indulgence, an intellectual masturbation. But what it really is an important task, and what fact, what it must be, is dealing with the political legacy, in fact, puts us at the cutting edge of a new revolutionary movement which is developing in our communities this very day. A movement which we see at Howard University. A movement which we see as thousands of youth took the street in Atlanta. A movement which we see as the catfish workers walk off their jobs and down in Delta area in Mississippi. It is a movement which we see as young students who are in the audience with you here today stop police or protest against police terror in Minnesota and elsewhere. Malcolm X's theory is a theory of revolutionary New African nationalism that has lighted the path for today's revolutionary progress and a revolutionary awakening of our African youth. It is the source of the reemergence of a movement which is before us today. Revolutionary emergence of the Malcolm X theory is something which has not come easy. It was not just a matter of calling a conference or having a few celebrations. It was something which began in earnest in 1976 when Mutulu Shakur, who is in prison today, said we got to bring Malcolm back because the youth don't know him. Because those who know him have forgotten him, and because some people say he's a traitor, and other ones say that he was confused. He says it's time to bring Malcolm back. And so in 78 at the Audubon Ballroom, when 1,000 of us come together 13 years after his death, it was a bad year for white supremacy. It was a bad year for imperialism. Because from that event, there was a tireless effort, a year after year, as Malcolm appeared on posters, as Malcolm was in the By Any Means Necessary newspaper, as Malcolm was in the songs, as Malcolm was in the march, the 5,000 people went to the UN. When Malcolm was on the lips of Assata Shakur when she got out of prison in 1979. And then there was Malcolm coming and coming into the youth, into the community in Harlem with the various rallies there. And then finally there was Malcolm on the lips of the rap singers. And there was Malcolm on the buttons and Malcolm on the chest and Malcolm on the posters. And this year, 1990, or last year, 1990, we call, still this year, I'm sorry, we call the year of Malcolm X. And this is the decade of self-determination. But Malcolm's legacy, of course, can't be caught on a trophy. It can't be seen on a picture or on a poster. You can't just find it in a few slogans. Malcolm's legacy is in his theory and in the work he did. So this is why this is an important conference to call us here today. It's important to ask the questions which we have asked, and it's important to answer those questions. And in answering these questions, I say that we should take the approach that Malcolm took. He says, first of all, you have to realize what the problem is. The problem that Malcolm saw is the same problem that exists today. We're colonized here in America. African people are colonized as a source of white supremacist colonization. The day they snatched you off the African continent and brought you here, you were being colonized. And just as the brothers and sisters later were colonized on the continent. And so through colonization, he said, look around and see how other people with the same problems are solving their problems. It is not that the problem has changed. I know those who talk about the worsening of the conditions, because the conditions do get worse. But the problem is the same, although the conditions get worse. It's like when you have a disease, if you have cancer, if you don't cure it, then your symptoms will get worse. And so now we have a moral decay in our community. We have more brothers in jail than we do in college. We have a terrible economic situation. And so we confront this problem and we ask, as Malcolm asked, well, what are other people doing to solve the similar problem, and then we should do the same. If we look at Malcolm X's philosophy, we find out it was the philosophy of people's war. And just as we see the Intifada in Palestine, we are looking at a people's war. As we see the uprising in Azania, we are looking at a people's war. We are looking at people's wars all over the world, which are bringing down powerful structures and sending them into destabilized conditions, where now they have to scream and scurry and look for puppets and Uncle Tom Negroes in order to take their place. We have some Negro-like phenomena ourselves right here in the city of New York. You know what I mean. We have these same kind of people being prepared to take the place once the revolution has asserted itself in this new movement which has arrived. But when you look at people's war and you look at Malcolm's philosophy, there's certain things that you have to understand. Malcolm had a progression in his philosophy. He started out as a hooligan in his adult life, and he ended up as a revolutionary, a profound revolutionary. Much has been said at these conferences and other places about the Pan-Africanism, which was Malcolm. It was Malcolm that told us that we left our minds in Africa. Much has been said about the internationalism of Malcolm, because it was Malcolm who grew beyond metaphysical understandings of the world, who grew beyond mythology, who grew beyond a mothership in Yaku, and who understood the task was to take up an active struggle in our community and to defeat the enemy which confronts us. So Malcolm accepted internationalism. He endorsed internationalism. But it would be wrong to think that Malcolm grew beyond revolutionary nationalism. Because we must understand very concretely, brothers and sisters, is that revolutionary nationalism is the foundation of internationalism. What's the root word of internationalism? It's nationalism. What's the root word of nationalism? It's nation. So a true nationalist is one who struggles to make a nation independent. And a true internationalist is one who has some kind of national power or national liberation movement in order to use their internationalism with. Internationalism without nationalism is a boogeyman concept. It has no real foundation in the world. You see those who are leading internationalists in the world, and you will find out that they are leading leaders of national liberation struggles in the world, whether they be in Africa, whether they be in Cuba, or whether they be in Latin America. They are people who have struggled for the liberation of nations. When we understand Pan-Africanism, we should understand it like Kwame Nkrumah talked about it. When he talked about nationalism, Pan-Africanism, and socialism, one is not exclusive of the other. They all work together. So when we look at what surrounds us here in America today in our colonized state, we must ask ourselves the questions that Malcolm asked. What is it that we must do? What is it that this people's war must concentrate on? We must understand that our war, that our theory must be brought down to concrete reality. Theory which doesn't sit down on earth is not good theory at all. Theory which can only be discussed on paper is not good theory at all. We've got to have theory that we can put into practice. It's got to come right down to earth. And so one of the things that it's got to do is got to deal with land, and it's got to deal with independence. We need land, and we need independence, just like other nations of the world need. Social revolutions must be territorially defined. They must be geographically set upon. You go anywhere else in the world and you ask people, show me your revolution, and they can show it to you on the map. If you can't show us what you're talking about on the map, then you're not talking about anything. You understand what I mean? This people's war in America. You have problems here today. We just can't seem to get it straight. We try to do what Malcolm says. We put together our little stores. We go out and we try to build economically. We turn back around and find out that the store is gone the next day. Where somebody that just got off the ship is running a store in our community. And we ask ourselves, well, what is the problem? But we're buying our goods from the same cracker that we're competing against in the first place. Because we still live in the shadow of the Black Belt. And the Black Belt is occupying. We live in the shadow of the Black Belt. We live in the shadow of Mississippi. Where you go down the Mississippi River and you look both ways. And you see down there in the Black Belt where 75% of the workforce is black. Where 60% of the consumers are black. Where the culture is an African culture. Where the land is Africans own the land. But as long as the land is controlled by someone else, then you can't produce the goods or have the border to conduct the trade, which is necessary to put your bread on your shelves and your stores. And so you have to look for someplace else. You look to these politicians, and we do the best that we can. We elect whoever we can, whenever we can. We put Kachi, whatever the joker's name is, out of office here. But I knew before you did it you were going to have problems. I told you you were going to have problems. I came here and said from one of these elections, I said that when Deacons won the election, his best days were behind him already. I said this. Because I come from Detroit, so I know what it's like. But the reality is we do the best that we can. We try to put black political officials in office, only to have them turn against us the day after they get in office. Handkerchief-headed Negroes, all of them, from coast to coast. This is right. Tom Bradley gave a key to the city to a South African dignitary not long ago. Coleman Young caught him selling South African cougarons and had the nerve to greet Mandela when he came to Detroit. A whole bunch of hypocrites. But what is the problem here? Is it just that you can't choose right? The problem is greater than that. You live in the shadow of the Black Belt. And by the time they put you in a position to start electing people, they had already maneuvered you out of the position to make those elections meaningful in any way whatsoever. When you were in the Black Belt, 80% in Mississippi, 80% in South Carolina, 80% in Louisiana, then you had the ability to take electoral power and to work towards state power. But now you've been scattered all over the empire. And so what can you do? Besides put somebody in a mayorship, which is only controlled by a governor in the first place, who's only controlled by a white supremacist federal system in the first place. And so we still live in the shadow of the Black Belt. Culturally, we live in the shadow of the Black Belt. We have some of the most beautiful culture in the world, but we don't control it. So it doesn't make any difference if an athlete or two gets $1 million a year because they send it right back to the same cracker that keeps it from us in the first place. This is what happens. If you look at Malcolm Sterry and People's War, it's always socialist. It's got to be socialist. This is the way you really ensure getting socialism. Maybe we need to share that with some of the people in the world. People's War ensures socialism? Because the people are what you're dependent upon. When you talk about unity in the people's war, you don't talk about unity from the top down. You talk about unity from the bottom up. You talk about doing the hard work for unity. Because as Emile Carr Cabral tells us, unity is struggle. And so we have to get out here in these struggles. And we have to bring our communities together in the fight against the landlord, in the fight against the crooked politicians, in the fight against police terror, in the fight against handkerchief-headed Negroes. And then from the unity that we create on the mass level, we create a national unity. This is what a people's war is all about. And when the people fight, then the people must establish a social system and an economic system which will do the people well. And so socialism is in order. When we live and we fight in a people's war. We deal, my brothers and sisters, with an understanding of a culture of permanent resistance. And so the struggle which is building today is a struggle of permanent resistance. It's not a kind of struggle where you wear an afro today and get a haircut tomorrow. That's not the kind of struggle it is. It's not the kind of struggle which can be defined by a dashiki. It's not the kind of struggle which can be defined by a piece of poetry or a certain song. It's the kind of struggle which you put into the babies. It's the kind of struggle that when the baby comes out of the mama's womb, we hold them up like they did in Roots. And we tell them the land is ours, the land belongs to us. This is what we tell them. We tell them that the people of the world must be free. We teach them even before they get out of the womb. It's like in Palestine. It's a struggle which never stops. It's a struggle of permanent resistance. Because what is on us today is an oppression, which is an oppression of permanent repression. They no longer just focus in on a few big-time leaders. In fact, they can't find a few big-time leaders worth anything to focus in on. So what they do is they deal with the people. They have not only attacked our movement, now they have attacked our population. Our population has been decimated. And if we don't do something about it, then it's going to get worse. And so when we talk about Malcolm today and revolutionary New African nationalism, which implies socialism, which implies internationalism, which implies an internationalism which is informed by anti-imperialism, we have no time today for internationalists who allow imperialism to exist in any form. We have no time today for people who will tell us that they're against imperialism in Africa and not against imperialism in Mississippi. We have no time for people who will tell us that they're fighting against imperialism down in Nicaragua and they won't even fight to free the upper part of Mexico. We have no time for people who ignore the Native American rights. We have no time for people who say they're against the United States of America and yet allow the United States of America to hold as sacred 50 states, neither one of which belong to them. And so we have to understand this, is that the revolution must be based upon a notion of self-determination, and it must be based upon a notion of resistance. By any means necessary, as Malcolm said. And you know what that means. Some people have criticized us for using that term. What would you have us say? You ought to know what we're talking about, right? And if you don't know now, then just pay attention, okay? By any means necessary, the kind of revolution where we build resistance in the people. We need self-defense. Everybody needs to be involved in self-defense. At every conference, at every tea party, at every council, we need to drill in the notion of self-defense. This is what Malcolm said. If you don't have it, you cannot win. And we have to go beyond self-defense in the way, in the immediate sense. We have to have a struggle of resistance. Every day of your life, you are being attacked. You are being attacked by economic terrorism. You are being attacked by political and all forms of physical terrorism. You are being attacked by chemical warfare in our communities and drugs seep in. The war against drugs is a hoax. It's nothing but a war against us. And so from the bottom up, we have to build a people's war. We need to build survival centers. We need to put the youth back out here in the struggle because the youth are coming back out here in the struggle. And we need to be there to give the youth the proper guidance. And as I believe my time is coming to an end, let me say this, my brothers and sisters. I think that one of the things that happened to us is that simultaneous with the attempt to destroy the legacy of Malcolm, so that they could recreate a false and a facade, something that was false, there was a lot of bickering amongst Malcolm's political children. And there's still bickering amongst Malcolm's political children. There are those who follow Malcolm's course as he leaned toward the socialist revolution. And you should, because Malcolm stood for that. We need a socialist revolution. There's never been a place that needed more of a socialist revolution than the United States of America. There was those of us who talked about Pan-Africanism. And we should have talked about Pan-Africanism. If Africa's not free, you'll never be free. It doesn't make any difference whether you're African or pink. You'll never be free until Africa's free. And thirdly, there was those of us who talked about land right here in America, where we built it, where we developed it, in the support of the Mexicans and Native Americans and all the rest of them struggling for land. But you know how it is when you got a little bit of knowledge, is that you begin to guard it and fight everybody with some other kind of knowledge. And so we couldn't get together. And the political progeny of Malcolm began to fight each other. It's time to bring it together. Because it's all in the same struggle. One cannot survive without the other. There will be no revolution here unless our people get self-determination, and there will be no completion of the revolution unless we all change the economic structure of the world. Thank you, and free to land.